Welcome to the Raising Grace podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. I am the mother of three children, and I do not know what I am doing. So I'm contacting regular parents just like you and I to help me find the best ways to help my kids and myself thrive. And maybe in the meantime, I can help you thrive as well. We aren't so different, you and I. With a little grace, we can do this. Oh, we should start this. Oh my God. Okay. Micah, Sheila. Tell me about yourself. Tell me about your family. Who are you besides mom?
Mom. I'm married to a lovely human who is a senior chief in the Navy. He retires next year, actually, in March, and he'll have done 24 years, which is not how long we've been together. I've only been part of this for 9 years now, so... we have two littles, a daughter who is 7 and a honey badger who is 5. It's a girl. Yeah. So that's our family. For work, I'm a labor and birth doula and birth photographer and yoga instructor. That's what I do.
So there you go. Your hours per week could be 0 or 50.
Yeah. I was at a birth, I don't know why I'm looking at my watch days. I had a birth on Thursday from 9 p.m. on Wednesday night until 3 p.m. on Thursday afternoon. So,
yeah, only 24 hours. That was lucky for her.
Earning them Dallas.
Did you become a parent the way that you expected? Like your age, your everything? Did your life go as exactly as expected?
100% not. In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I mean, I'm married to my baby daddy, which was kind of always my hope and plan. But he's not my first husband. However, I did marry the man that I actually wanted to marry eventually. So I got the baby daddy that I wanted and the husband that I wanted, who both happened to be the same person. Just not in the order or the timeline I had anticipated. I definitely thought I'd become a mother much earlier than I did. Although my first was born when I was 34. So while medicine likes to call that a geriatric pregnancy, by today's standards, by, you know, very modern standards, I was quite normal, a normal age. I just thought I would be a mom, in my 20s, but I didn't get married for the first time until I was even 27. So that was literally never going to be part of my deal. So
how are you dealing with being Micah? Like, how do you be yourself with your kids? Who are you?
That's a great question that I don't know we have time to unpack. I used to say I drank coffee like I would mainline it. Recently coffee has started to make me really sick, so I don't drink coffee anymore. This is tea right here. So
very sad.
I'm very sad for me too. It's hard sometimes. I have ADHD and a lot of anxiety and depression. So it can be hard to manage all of those diagnoses. While having kids, I have no, like, in a lot, and I feel like so many people would say the same thing, like just being outside can be helpful, like getting fresh air and sunlight, which in the PNW is super easy. It's cold all the time.
Cold and rainy.
It's hard. I work out pretty regularly. Like, I love lifting weights. It's a good stress release for me, but I really can only do that during the school year when the girls aren't home. I try to go outside with them a lot. And the biggest thing, and I think it weirds people out, I guess, some people, I read all the time. Like, I'm on book like 42 of the year. People are like, how do you make time for reading? Like, you have all this stuff. And I was like, if I don't read, it messes me up. Like, I have to always have a book going. I don't know how I don't know. I feel like I'm sort of in a tailspin right now. Like the last few months have been a little bit of a tailspin for me. So I don't really know.
Well, okay. So on that track, which we didn't discuss this earlier, you're married to a Navy guy. You guys just moved over from Japan. You live in Japan.
Yeah.
So not only are you dealing with anxiety, ADHD, depression, kids. What was that like in Japan, having your kids learn a completely different culture as littles?
It was the most amazing experience I've had in my life to date. I've never experienced something more incredible than living in Japan and having our children be like involved in the community. They both went to Japanese preschools, yochiens. They loved it. Felix, especially the oldest, she learned so much at her school. She was speaking Japanese on the regular. She still currently loves a lot of the food that she would eat for lunch. Like she loves her onigiri, which is like these little rice balls that are wrapped in seaweed. And she loves her seaweed snack. She loves sushi, like lives for sushi. Like ramen, they would murder a juggalo for ramen. It was incredible. Like there were so many, like we had a car in when we were living there, which was wild to learn to drive on the opposite side and learn to, you know, navigate things in kilometers rather than miles and all the things. But I would find myself like driving through town, going to pick up the honey badger from preschool. And I would be sitting at a stoplight and it would just sort of take me aback a little bit. And we'd be like, holy shit. Like I live here. Like I'm shopping in town. I have like my very specific restaurants and stores and markets that I love to go to in town. My daughters are in school in town and I know their Japanese senseis. And like, it just was weird. It was a weird feeling to be like, I don't just like live here. I am fully existing in Japan right now. And it was amazing. I think that's part of what made it so hard to move home is that we had such a phenomenal experience there. And some of my best friends, I miss them every single day. And I, at least once a week, I find myself like coming near tears about how great we had it and how amazing our friends were and all that stuff. It was fantastic. We got to travel all over the world, see things that we never would have seen because we didn't live close enough. Like turns out Japan is a lot closer to Australia than America. So it's real cheap to get there.
Oh, nice. I'll remember that when I take my world trip that people never take.
Because kids. So yeah, it was hands down the most amazing experience of my life to date.
What do you think, parenting styles in Japan, how's that different?
Very different. It's the biggest difference is the amount of autonomy and responsibility they allow their very young children to have. So for example, kindergarten is part of a yochen, part of preschool in Japan. So by the time you're grade one and you go to the elementary school, which American students are allowed to go to the local elementaries and high schools too, like they can go, you have to be able to navigate by yourself from your front door to school and back by grade one.
And like, how far was that?
I would say it was maybe just under a mile from the front gate of the base to the elementary school and the yochan that my daughter went to were right across from, like it was a feeder. So it was a little under a mile, but it was a good haul. And there it's Japan. So everything's sort of like twisty turny. There's no like straight. It's not like New York where it's like a grid, you know, it's Japan. Right. Everything's a bit herky jerky. They expect that their children will be responsible, but they also offer the opportunity for them to be responsible and autonomous and all this stuff. And a lot of that also is because it's just the way I'd like to describe Japan is I'm like, the whole culture exists under the umbrella of respect. So like I would send my daughter to, she rode a cute little bus to school, but she would have like $200 or $300 in her backpack to give to her teacher for tuition. And I never once worried about that. Can you imagine sending your child to kindergarten with $300 in their backpack?
No. I think with the United States, the fear is in the parent that we don't trust the community. And it sounds like in Japan, they trust the community.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not even about kid. I trust my children to get to and from school. I don't trust the community to not stop and not, you know, not hit them when they cross the road.
Right. So they here, like one of the biggest examples I can give for like how the Japanese are just such a kind and respectful people. I was probably like our second week living in Japan and we decided to walk off base and go to like a ramen shop about a mile away. We didn't have a car yet. So we walked with the girls, a stroller. Well, I pulled my phone out of my pocket really fast and my military ID went flying. And I had no idea this had happened until like about a block and a half later, a Japanese woman comes running up behind me and hands me my ID.
Like, and how important is that military ID when you first move to a base?
I would have been so screwed. Like it would have been a nightmare just to get back on base would have been awful. But like, this is like at the playgrounds. Playgrounds the size of the Apex Center, like they're freaking massive. Just like imagine, like yeah, the size of the Apex Center, like the structure and the property.
Really,
they're like three stories tall. The property is just enormous.
Parks,
just community parks, playgrounds.
They're like a convention center.
Well, it's not, I'm not saying like,
no, indoor. I know they're outdoor, like, but they're like the size of a convention center.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll send you a picture of one.
Unbelievable.
They're crazy.
I mean, I'm moving there, but unbelievable.
Like there's a slide there that's three stories tall that my 18-month-old was routinely just going down, like fork and loved it. I would just go with my daughters and be like, be free. Never once worried about them. Anytime there was like a young man or an elderly man on the playground, I had no concerns whatsoever because that was either a dad with his kids or a granddad. And he like a couple of times the honey badger got stuck on something, like she was 18 months old and he would just like pick her up and reset her and like put her down. Never once was like, don't touch my daughter. Like,
yeah,
never freaked me out. So it was weird coming back to America and being like, oh, I have to strip that all away from my daughters now. Like the amount of
freedoms are there, but I have to be with you.
The amount of
freedom. You have to have me in eyesight at all times. The fear that lives in the United States, the fear of our community. I struggle with that because I grew up in a small town where there just was no fear. There was no fear. And I think you grew up here in Arvada and it was less in the 80s, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
I still had it in the city, probably.
I mean, we rode to Hell and Gone all the time on our bicycles. And then we would just be like, hey, bye, we're going to the park. It was like 3 miles away. We would ride our bikes up the canal to Majestic View Park. Like,
yeah, I would not let my son do that.
And I was
lived next to a park. And I have worked up to letting him go on his bike there. Like no crossing the roads, no, but it's a major park. And I want to give him all of the independence. And I don't trust my community. And I hate that feeling.
Yeah.
And every time I'm like, just get rid of that feel. That's just in your head, Sheila. There's another abduction or there's another shooting or there's another. And it's just one more thing and one more thing. And I'm like, sorry, kids. I trust you. I trust no one else. And it's terrifying.
Yeah. Like It's so hard. So moving back was not easy. And that contributed a great deal to my ongoing depression. Cause I'm like, nothing is as good as it was when we were in Japan. Like the food is so, everything is so expensive here. Like just existing is expensive. And like, it's like emotionally expensive as well, where it's just, I don't feel safe doing anything.
Mm-hmm. It is emotionally expensive. I totally get that. That's a really good phrase to use for that. How can we as parents be more Japanese? what parts of the Japanese culture have you taken with you?
We don't wear our shoes in the house. that's a big thing. There's just so much. It's just a matter of like being kind and respectful. I think if we just went through our days and was like, is this kind? Is this respectful? Like, I'm not asking anybody to be like nice and happy all the time. Like, that's insane. Like, there were Japanese people that were like, you very clearly having off days, but they were never like, they were never awful to another person about it. It was just like, they would be short and they'd be to the point and whatever, but never, never unkind, you know? And I think the biggest thing is, how does this benefit the whole? Like, you know, I don't really want to get into like how COVID was managed in Japan, but it was things like that where it was like, oh, my individual comfort matters less than the safety and stability of the whole. So there's so many, like, I never, never worried about being on a train. I was never like Japanese train, especially when we were living in Tokyo, those things get packed. I never once worried about my child being touched inappropriately or me being groped or anything. Like the one time that happened was hilarious because I've never seen a fall down drunk Japanese person. And she was like in her mid 20s and she fell into me and used my chest as a landing pad.
It's very soft.
Yeah. I was like a breastfeeding mom at the time. So I was like, there's a lot to get here.
Yeah. It'll bounce. But, you might get a little wet.
Yeah, that's the only time I was ever even like touched by another person in Japan. And it was just really funny. And her boyfriend was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm like, this is funny because I'm a little drunk too. But you just never worried about it. Like, you know, people don't talk on the cell phones in the trains. Like there's a very specific way that you sit and exist on a full train. Like, it's just the umbrella of respect that you live under. Like you would never take something that isn't yours. Like if you saw a dollar on the ground, we'd probably pick it up, right?
Yes. Yes.
100%. Like, yeah, very much. I would do that thing. If a Japanese human found a $1,000 bill, which is 10 bucks on the ground, they would take it. And either, depending on where they were, they would place it on a nearby surface. Like if it was outside, like, oh, this person will probably come back and they'll find it here. Or if it's in a mall, they will take it and give it to the nearest, like, not security guard, but like the
kiosk.
Kiosk. And, yeah. They'll take it to the nearest like information kiosk and leave it there. And someone will come back and get it. You will always know that you can get back. You can get something back. Like my girlfriend left a little tiny bag of pastries in the play structure inside of a mall. And we had gone to dinner. She's like, oh crap. Like it's only like $5, but like they're really good pastries. So I'm just going to go back and see. Sure enough, they were at an information kiosk closest to the playground.
Wow.
Her $5 bag of pastries. It's just like, if it's not yours, don't take it. Like, I would go to the grocery store and be annoyed that I had my keys with me. So I just like throw them under the seat in my car.
Do things not get stolen at all in Japan?
God,
or
no.
Or so rare that
it is unheard. Like, I locked my car when I was on base because them Americans are quick. Mm-hmm. But out in town, nope. Keys were all, I never locked my car in town. Like in the middle of Hiroshima, never locked my car. Wow. Never a concern. I would leave my purse, my wallet, everything in plain view. Never had an issue.
Wow. That yep. is a huge transition to come back to.
Yeah. Like having to remember to bring my keys in every time and lock my car door in my own fucking driveway.
Right.
It was weird. So there's just, I think, back to your question, I think that's the biggest thing is just like existing under an umbrella of respect. Like, is this respectful? Is this kind?
Mm-hmm.
And wow. Kind of like one, change the world one kid at a time. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
That's so interesting. It's so great that you have that perspective though. And that you can always turn back to that and say, you know, in Japan, there are not all people are bad. We can trust people. We can trust people. And I would say a majority of Americans are good, but we don't hear about them and we don't worry about them. We worry about the minority that are not great, that are going to, you know, take a gun to a park.
Yeah.
Shoot up a school, go to a grocery store. Like I live in Colorado. Like this happens so often.
Like,
and I send my kids to a school.
Mecca of crazy.
Colorado is a mecca of mass shootings, and it is terrifying. I send my kids to school every day. While I'm grateful that I have a great, you know, education system, are they safe? I don't know.
At what cost?
At what cost are they? You know, and well, you know, it's so rare. Is it? It's not that. It's not getting any more. It's not getting rarer. It's getting more
common. It feels like in our lifetime. There's been a lot that has happened in Colorado, just in Colorado.
And just in the point to the time that I've lived in Boulder County, which is 3 years, we've had many mass shootings, many.
It's insane.
And it's unreal and it's scary. And every time it happens, I'm like, okay, I should homeschool my kids and keep them in the house. And then I have mm-hmm. to stop myself and say, no. I cannot be afraid by this. I cannot live like this. I have to tell my kids that they're safe and let them live their life and not put them in a bunker somewhere. You
right.
know, and oftentimes I'll sit and remember, you know, I've talked to my dad a little bit and he grew up in the 50s and they did bomb shelter
yep.
warnings all the time. You know, our kids hide under desks. You know, I have to hide for the potential mass shooters, right? My dad had to hide for potential bomb threats. Of course, there was actual mass shooters in my time and not actual bombs hitting the United States.
Right.
You know? But there's always been a fear mechanism for parents. There's always been something that parents have been afraid of, I think, in the United States, at least. We've always been under war in some aspect. I think you and I grew up in a time where there was so little fear. We were not in any major wars where we were concerned, at least.
The 80s and 90s were
hadn't
like
started.
An easy time.
It was like a unicorn time for us,
yeah.
honestly, as children. And now to be able to be raising children in a time when we have never experienced this, you know, our parents may have experienced it, but we have never experienced it. It's very difficult. And when you see parents being so judgmental about each other and how they're parenting their kids, I get so upset because, oh my God, we're just doing the best we can with what we have.
Yeah.
Everybody, yeah. The anxiety level of American parents have increased exponentially. Mm-hmm. And to raise children in this generation is exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. And it's, you know, I don't want people to not have children. I think that, you know, we have to raise these good children to be the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I guess that's why I started this podcast, because it's so difficult in our situation. And how are you coping? And it is so amazing to hear what they're doing in Japan and how life is so different there and how that's not an impossible dream.
No,
for our kids.
Like, they've been doing it for a hot minute, a whole lot longer than America's existed. So something's going right.
Right, right. And how do we just take bits and pieces of that? Because I'm not going to be able to move to Japan. I can't,
right.
You know, how do we take that and build it into our family as much as we can? I mean, what I've done so far, I give my kids GPS watches with phone, with the phone capability on it. And I said, if you want to go to the lake, you take your GPS watch. I know where you're at and you can call me if there's an emergency.
Yeah.
Come back, you know. But it's, I'm still thinking about it. I'm still yep. thinking about it. I still have anxiety about it. And
yeah,
what if?
We got the girls' walkie-talkies because we live on a base right now. So they can't leave. They'll never be able to leave base. Like they're never going to get out of a gate. not without somebody very much noticing, like, why is this 3-foot human walking through pylons? That's weird. So yeah, we got the girls their walkies and that sort of stuff. And I think like, we've been trying to give them, we've been trying to give them autonomy and responsibility where we can. So like, Felix, the oldest, she sometimes makes dinner for us and like, she's in charge of the whole thing. And, you know, we, you know, just simple things that are like, oh, how can we make you under, well, and one of the biggest things that we took away from schooling in Japan is like the senseis for a 3-year-old is like, their backpack is not your responsibility.
Oh, wow.
Their backpack is their responsibility. So if they forget something at home, that is not a you problem. That is a them problem.
So you're teaching kids responsibility as soon as possible.
As soon as possible. So like if like the girls tend to be really irresponsible with their things sometimes, like things get lost or broken or whatever. And I'm like, it's your stuff. I'm not like, you know, they'll be like, where are my shoes? I'm like, I don't know. They're not my shoes. Like, I can't know everything. So like if Felix forgets her like little homework folder or whatever, or take home folder, I'm like, well, I guess you don't have your take home folder today.
Like, right.
You know, short of her forgetting her lunch, I'm not going to bring anything to school for her. Mm-hmm. Like she forgot it. It's her responsibility. Like,
yeah, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with getting them as independent as possible, as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Like, I love that they rely on me for certain things. And like, they opted out of taking the bus to school this year. They want to be mommy drop off and pick up. And I'm like, that's fine. Like, I would love to, you know, I would love to do that for you. But like, if you don't have your items in your backpack, when we leave in the morning, that's a you problem. Like I'm not going to save your ass for everything. Like I'll do a lot of stuff to protect you, but I'm not going to protect you from you.
And how huge is that going to be in their 20s?
It's
they're going to be fine. Micah, they're going to be fine.
But I hope so.
They're going to be fine. If not, their college money can go towards therapy. It'll be great.
That's yeah. Jeff and I are like, well, whatever's in savings, they can use for therapy or college. I don't care. Their money.
Right. Pick and choose. All right. I'm going to transition to postpartum depression because I remember you posting a lot about that. What experience did you have with that?
So I had the dreamiest pregnancy. I'm very good at being pregnant. I am very good at giving birth. I love them all. I would sooner give birth than get my nose pierced again. Like I love giving birth. Like a huge reason that I wish I would have started my mothering journey earlier is because I, knowing how good I am at it, I really wanted to be a surrogate, like for one person in particular. And you know, for my best friend in the entire world, she can't have any more children. And so I was like, if you want more, I'm here. And we had,
I can make them, I can birth them. You can take them.
You can take them.
Welcome.
And she and I had a long conversation about like, she was like, Yeah. If my experience would have been any different, I would have taken you off. But she was also very good at being pregnant. She's like, it would just be way too hard to watch my best friend be pregnant with my baby. And I'm like, totally get it. Just my uterus is available if you need it. Anyway, I had a very short first labor. It started at 9 PM and she was born at 6:40 AM. She came screaming out of me, literally. I pushed her head out and then she like popped her hand out, turned me into vagina confetti. And
like, that's fantastic.
She grabbed
I'm
going
to put husband. Explicit on this.
Any E, you know who I am.
I know. I'm not sorry.
Yeah, she popped her hand out next to her head, grabbed onto my husband's wrist and pulled herself the rest of the way out. Like yeah. I pushed her down. That was it. She came out and she started screaming and never stopped. She just never stopped. It took a really long time to get her to latch. We went home, 2 days later and the discharge nurse was like, so is there any questions that you have before you go? And I was like, I don't think my baby's eaten in 2 days. And she just like dropped everything. And she's like, oh my God, let's fix this now. She happened to be a former lactation consultant, which worked out real. So she helped me figure out like nipple shields and whatever. I had like small flat nipples and my baby had a really tiny mouth. She was born 10 days early. She was the size of a preemie. Like she was barely cleared 6 pounds when she was born. She was very tiny. So we had a lot of problems. And then we got home and my recovery was miserable and Felix cried. This is not an exaggeration as much as it sounds like it is. She would cry for approximately 20 hours a day, every day for the first 6 months of her life. Just like,
oh yeah, that sounds pleasant.
Blood-curdling screams.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't producing very much. We're pretty sure the reason that she was, she didn't gain at like, she lost her 10% weight in the hospital, like babies normally do. She didn't gain, more than a couple ounces for like the first 3 months of her life. She was borderline failure to thrive. And we're pretty sure it's because she was starving. Like I wasn't, and I was so hell bent on being a breastfeeding mom, like no formula, no nothing. Like, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it.
Well, there's a lot of, again, that's mom shaming. I mean, that's you've heard
it. But
I
was doing it to myself.
No, I know. But that's because that's what you heard. That's what you were told the best thing to do is this one thing. And if you can't do that one thing, then you're a failure as a parent.
Yeah. And none of my friends or my doula wasn't, no one was actively saying this to me. It was all in my head. It was all like the societal bullshit that was in my head, And unbeknownst to me, at one point my husband was like, F it. And he started feeding Felix formula when it was his turn to feed her. Like, we had a really great schedule going so that we would each get enough sleep. And when it was his time to feed her, if I didn't have any milk in the freezer, he would give her formula. And I didn't know. And I'm glad I didn't know. Because it would have sent me over the edge. Like I feel like that would have been a marriage ending fight on my end.
Do you think your postpartum had something to do with that as well as anxiety and any of that have to do with some of the other than just the societal this literally societal bullshit saying this is what you have to do as a mom or you're a failure?
Well, so the postpartum depression was hard because it was like it hit me like a ton of bricks, but I didn't realize it. It went undiagnosed for 6 months. Until my husband finally called my midwife and was like, Morgan, she's nuts. Like, and like, not in a funny haha, like she usually is way, but like in I'm concerned way. And so he made an appointment for me to go see Morgan and I did. And she put me on meds and things started like leveling out a little bit, but
I love Jeff, your husband. Oh my gosh.
He's
what an amazing guy. Like, I know at the time you would have murdered him. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've had those moments. And then I look back and say, wow, husband, it seems you did the right thing. I appreciate that. I apologize. or anything that happened before the, I apologize for what I said before I was on medication, which I say 100%. A lot. I say that
like,
a lot.
The amount of times that I have said that to him, I'm like, I'm sorry for what I said when I was not medicated. but yeah, he took it upon himself. He's like, this is not okay. And I think that the clincher for him, like that sent him over the edge into being like, no, I'm calling Morgan immediately. Was when he came home from work one day and I was like, why doesn't my baby love me? And he was like, she's 6 months old. You're the only person she loves.
Right.
You know, like that's insane. Never said any of that to me. Never. He did everything he could. He was constantly making appointments for me to go get manicures and pedicures. He was sending me to go get coffee. He was sending, like, he was doing all the things. He was, you know, he did everything. He did so much work with the baby when she was first home. Like he must have been so tired. And so, you know, and he is, we've had the conversation in the recent past where he's like, I don't know where that happy person from 2013 went.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it all changed after the baby was born. And I'm like, I don't know, man. And a big part of what fed into that was all of my friends that were like, I met all of my friends in Maryland through a prenatal yoga class where the teacher was our doula as well. She's amazing. and so my class of all of them were having babies and everything was beautiful and wonderful and there was no drama. And it was like babies were latching and they were all this stuff. Like my best friend, I had the hardest time being around her. I wanted nothing more than to be around Andrea, but it was so hard to be around her because her baby was born 5 days before mine was, and her postpartum experience was nothing short of perfect from mm-hmm. what I could see. It was beautiful. Like the baby was feeding well, latching well. He was super happy. Like he was just a great baby, all this stuff. And I was miserable. And it was so hard for me to be around all my friends who were having such successful experiences from what I was seeing that I was just sad all the time. Like I want to be with my friends, but I cannot physically be around them. It is too hard. So that fed a lot into it as well. And
the comparison.
Yeah. And just like,
which is such a mental thing that is so up here. And how do you turn
like, I remember thinking at one point I was like, I just want one of my friends to have a shitty experience like mine. Like, and how awful it's like, I don't want my friend to have a shitty experience, but I want someone else to be able to say mm-hmm. like, I know exactly what you're feeling like right now. Cause it felt like no one knew what was going mm-hmm. on, or nobody could, everybody was always like, wow, that sucks. I'm really sorry. And I'm like, yeah, but you have no fucking idea, man. It's
how many people told you to relax?
Literally no one.
No one told you to relax.
I had, oh, man. I would say had, but
just just relax. It'll happen.
I am still so close with all of my mom friends, my like class of, moms, so close with them, and not a single one of them ever gave me any advice that was like, I hate you right now. Mm-hmm. Like I'm still so close with them. Like I talk with them all the time. They're an incredible, they're very knowledgeable. They're very gentle. They're mm-hmm. very, I don't know. Like we just all like, and it's not like, I'm friends with Katie and I'm friends with Andrea and I'm friends. Like we're all friends. Like right. We're all tight. And we all live in different places. Like we're spread all over the world and we're still so super close. And so they're still my people that I'm like, hey, why is my 5-year-old being a giant a-hole right now? And they'll be like, okay, well, here's what you need to know. And here's what you want to know. Like, I'm going to tell you the thing that's going to make you feel good, but I'm also going to tell you like the educated science information. And mm-hmm. it's like, they're just wonderful people. Like they're so smart and so gentle. And it's just like the perfect combination.
That is so necessary. I have a couple of girlfriends that I go to that I met right when we moved up here. We brand new, we moved to a new house, a new town, a new school. And literally 6 months later, the pandemic happened, but I met these two people right before the pandemic happened and it saved my life. Like,
yeah.
Of just, they're affirming moms. They're there to tell you, you know what? That's normal. Kids are a-holes sometimes. This is what I've done to try to help. These are the parenting experts that I follow. Here's what this person said this one time. This expert said that you should try. But I tried that once and it didn't work. So maybe it'll work for you. And just no shaming. Like having these relationships with women who are experiencing similar things to you, maybe a little bit different, that can kind of guide you in a loving kind of way, which I didn't know I needed until I had it. And I was like, this is amazing.
Right. And it's also like the biggest piece of it for me is that it's safe. Like I can cry to them and be like, I legit hate my kids right now. And they're like, same girl, same.
Like, exactly. And no shame.
It's like, you're having a bad day. Your kid is having a bad day. You're allowed to like have bad days and not want to be around anyone, including your children. Like, and we always say to each other, like, any of us will be like, I'm such a terrible mom. And they'll be like, oh my God, stop it. We said this to someone else last week. Like, you're not a terrible mom. You're a human who's tired. Like,
you're having a bad day. Calm down. Go eat some chocolate.
that's usually when we'll pull the relax card now is like, girl.
Yeah.
Someone needs a glass of wine and a nap. It might be both of you.
Right.
Probably just you.
Do you need a timeout, mommy? Do you need a mommy timeout? Like, I don't want to watch your kids, but you should figure out how to do that.
Yeah. And like, it's just one of those things where you're like, hey, when was the last time you took a nap? When was the last time you like sat down? Like, we will legitimately ask these questions of each other and be like, I think we need to download right now. Like, let's go through these steps. Like, when was the last time you did something kind for yourself? Have you showered today? Did you brush your teeth? Like all of
did
these.
Did you eat like, your breakfast or the kids' breakfast? What did you have for breakfast? Do you have time for a short walk today?
Yeah.
Do you have,
Because so much of the time we get wrapped up in the minutiae and we're like, oh, but like, there's these major things that like, they seem small. It's like, so I didn't go outside and like walk to the post box today or whatever. It's like, but remember that 5 minute walk to the post box is the thing that makes you feel super radical. Maybe go do that. Like these seemingly small things are a lot bigger than we think they are. And the things that we think are so big are really just the minutiae of the day.
Isn't that so funny?
Like it's wild. So yeah, like, having a safe place to like decompress with people who are in a similar-ish boat. Like we're all in the same crappy dinghy. It's just like, nobody's in a yacht, you know? Like,
right. And we all chose to be in that dinghy. Okay.
Yeah. Like nobody's.
That's where I wanted to be. And then I got there and I was like, so this is not what I expected. I was thinking more of a yacht. This is much smaller than what my imagination brought me to.
Feel like there's holes coming. Don't know where.
Is the boat sinking? Is the boat on fire?
Is this water or did my kid pee again?
I don't know what's happening. I feel like kids I don't know what the age is even, but like, I would say under school age even, but kids under six. Oh man. It's a world where you feel like you have no control over what's going on with your life. And it all starts that very moment that baby's born, when that baby dictates your life.
Yeah.
And you think you have control over what that baby eats and when that baby sleeps, and you have no control. You have zero control. And that's when our anxiety kicks in. And one question for you during the postpartum depression, what is something that, other than your husband calling your midwife and saying she needs help, do you think you could have gotten out of that spiral yourself? Like, could you have called your midwife and said, I think I'm losing my mind?
No.
Or you were so deep in it that you couldn't have?
I was so deep in it. And I've written blogs about this where, you know, I was like, oh, this is just this isn't what I expected, but this is just normal. Like this is actually normal. And one of the most important things that my doula said to me that I now say to all of my clients is, just because something is normal does not mean it is correct.
That is huge. That is
so
huge.
Like we all say it is normal to just pee a little bit every time you sneeze after you have birth. That is normal. It is not correct. You can and should fix that. It is
right.
not normal for
you
your pelvic
don't need
floor.
To pee your adult pants the rest of your life.
You do not. Like, you should be able to do a cartwheel or jump on a trampoline. Like, you know, the only thing that should be keeping me from jumping on a trampoline is my knees. It shouldn't
right.
be my pelvic floor.
Or your saggy boobs flapping you in the face.
Oh, I got you. Just yeah. double strap those in.
Just duct tape will fix that problem.
I mean, I love a trampoline. So like, anytime I see a trampoline, I'm like, I'm 20 again. Turns out not.
You're like, why does my elbow hurt? I don't understand.
Yeah, like, why do my eyes hurt today? I went jumping.
So what is it? What's some advice you would give a new parent who is feeling a little overwhelmed, but might very well have postpartum depression? What advice could you give a mom? Or even if it's somebody who's friends with somebody who's going through something like that.
So yeah, it's a lot easier for, like, especially with my work as a doula. And because postpartum depression hit me so hard two times, I talk a lot with the birthing person's partner about postpartum depression. It's like, here's the things that you need to be on the lookout for. And it's, we all like to say, like, you know, we've said it, you see all the memes or whatever's Facebook shares going around when it comes to, like, you know, national, whatever prevention month, depression, all, you know, whatever. And they're like, my door is always open. It's like, yeah,
nobody's gonna come
awesome.
To you.
No one's coming to you.
No.
Like, in the thick of it, it was not happening for me. Mm-mm. I did not want to get out. I didn't want to leave the house. I was like, I barely want to put on pants. Like, how am I going to get out of the house? My girlfriends, they didn't necessarily, because we were all postpartum, because we were all kind of like in that fog, but they all sort of noticed that something was a little off. And so they would just pop over with no expectation. They would never invite themselves in. They would just be like, hey, like, they would drop something at my door and then text me as they were leaving, like, hey, I just dropped off coffee for you. Like, you know, or I just dropped off your favorite beer, which was like one of my girlfriends. Like, it is the first time that I cried postpartum because I was super dead inside. She dropped off a 6-pack of my favorite beer from Colorado and 2 Totino's party pizzas. She just knew that those were my favorite things. And she dropped those off and I walked outside and, like, immediate tears. And I was like, I didn't realize this was exactly what I needed. I needed somebody to know me.
Mm-hmm.
I needed someone to, like, know who I was. Ooh, I'm starting to cry. I needed someone to know who I was before mm-hmm. I had this baby.
Yeah.
And she knew. She just happened to remember that that beer and that pizza were things that I love. So I think it's, I think it's a lot of that is, making sure that you have people around to remind you of who you were before you had a baby, because who you were before you had a baby is still who you are. Like, you didn't stop being a musician because you had kids.
Mm-hmm.
You're just a musician who has kids.
Right.
Or a mom who is a musician. And sometimes those change. Like, sometimes you do music more than you do kids. And
sometimes you do music to get yourself back to normal.
Right. Like, you don't stop.
Or you were a writer. I mean, you're a writer before you had kids. And
yep.
it's so hard to get back into that. But
you don't stop being those people just because another part of you has developed or unearthed. It's just like, you don't have to give up the things that you love because you have kids. Like, how awful to have our children raised in an environment where they feel like my mom loves me, but she also misses everything that was before me. Like, or
my mom gave up everything for me. I don't want my children to see that.
I don't want my children to see that.
I did not give up everything for you. I gained everything because of you.
I actively chose to bring you into my life. I made the choice to bring you in, and I didn't give up other things to do that. You are an addition to my life, and mm-hmm. arguably one of the better additions that I've made to my life.
Little chaotic addition. It's chaotic.
Yeah,
and I'm going to make this work.
Oh, they choose chaos every morning.
They choose chaos. You don't have to get yourself involved in that chaos every day.
Just let them jump on their bed. But yeah, like having people who like, I hate this word, but hold you accountable. Like, hey, what did you do for yourself today? And I don't want to hear like, I finished the laundry, blah, blah, blah. No. If it has anything to do with your domestic life, it doesn't count.
No.
Like, what is
Although something- I'll give you a shower if you showered.
That's just to get you to functional.
Right. Did you get to functional today? Great.
Yeah,
can you give me one more thing? Give me one more thing.
If we can get, like, if what you need is to get to functional, I'm going to help you get to functional. But what we really want is like engaged.
Right.
Like there's a big difference. And
that's a big step, man. That's a big step.
It's a huge step.
Going far.
And I think like there was a, I have a lot of my clients do like journaling or whatever activities, usually in their third trimester or whatever, like, hey, write down all the things that you're scared about and just get them out of your system. Like they have no business being in your system anymore. It's a lot of hippy dippy nonsense that right. I use in my work, and I love it. And my clients love it, or they wouldn't hire me. So write down all the things you're scared of about pregnancy, labor and delivery, postpartum, being a mom, like being a parent to two kids, whatever. What are you scared of? Right.
Getting through today. Getting through today is scary. Okay.
Scary.
Because my kids need dinner every night and then they don't eat.
No one told me I would be in charge of dinner for the rest of my life.
Dinner every night. And then they won't eat. I made you dinner. You said you were hungry. I made you dinner and you're not eating it.
But damn it. You want the snacks.
All right, Micah, what is giving you hope right now?
The honey badgers. It really is. Gen Z and Gen A, I see the way that they're reacting to injustices, small and large. And I'm like, when do we get to put you in charge?
Because
like,
enough.
There's a lot of me that's like, our generation, Gen Z and millennial or Gen X and millennials. I'm like, I don't know that we have any business running shit. But I think we're still reeling from a lot of trauma. Like our generation is pretty, like has a lot of trauma to unearth. And I think, yeah, Gen Z and Gen A give me a lot of hope. I see the way that even the young teens that I know today are like, just
they're passionate.
They're passionate and they're like, they're super engaged and they want to know what's going on. But more than that, they just love everybody. Like there just really aren't mean girls anymore. Right. Like, I mean, I'm sure there are, but like, you just don't hear about it. Like you hear about the kid, you know, at the baseball player that like thwacked a kid in the head, thwacked a batter in the head with a ball on accident. And the batter like went down, got up and immediately went over to the pitcher and gave him a hug. And was like, dude, I'm fine. Like it was an accident. And like just caring for each other on a level that we have never seen before. Never. And they're caring for people that are older than them and people that are younger than them. They just have such a deep sense of justice that it just gives me, I can't believe that Gen Z is in college right now. And I'm like, oh my God, it's going to get so good in like 5 years. Like,
right,
things are getting good. And part of it, I think, is that our generation, it feels like the Zennials are kind of like, we're the first generation willing to engage with our children the way that we do, where it's like, I'm willing to admit that I've made a mistake. I'm willing to say that I'm sorry to you. And I'm willing to ask for your advice. Like, right. You tell me
to
how
an extent.
I can be a better parent.
To an extent.
Yeah. But like, right. Like I will ask the girls all the time. Like they sometimes have gotten really scared when I get ramped up, and I see it, and it makes me so sad that I do that. And I'm like, hey, what is something that you think I could do to help me calm down a little bit quicker? Help me not get so yelly all the time. Like, what is something you think? Cause they may think of something that I've never thought of. They're 5 and 7. They got weird stuff in their head.
They like, really do. It's shocking how much my son tells me all the time things. And I'm like, what? I'm sorry. What?
Yeah. And one of them was like, why don't you try coloring? And I was like, God damn it. I love coloring. Like, why have I never thought of this?
Should I pay them as my therapist? Like, what do
I want? So being able to like acknowledge, apologize, and ask are the like three things that we're doing with our children. And I think that is turning them into people who are willing to do the same things at, like we're doing it as adults, they're doing it as children.
Right. And how exciting. It's exciting to get them to learn the things that we're striving for. Like, how do we get our kids to learn the things that we're striving for so that maybe they don't have to struggle as much in their 20s as we did.
Right. You told me what I did. It was not good.
Yeah. Not ideal. Not ideal. I was married at the time and my husband stayed with me. So that's shocking.
Hey, Justin.
Hey, Justin, you win a prize. You're going to keep me forever. That's awesome. I feel like we had such a good conversation. I don't have any more questions for you. Do you have any questions for me?
I feel like so many, but like better offline. I really enjoy talking to you and it's always lovely to see your face. And I'm like, I was telling my husband, I was like, I'm doing a podcast with one of my girlfriends that I was in a band at church with, and she's really funny. And then she's from my dad's hometown. And my husband's like, cool. I'm sleeping.
I know. It's so hard to explain you to people. Cause like we barely knew each other. My God, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, and then became better friends over Facebook, just going through life the way that it's brought, you know, thank God for Facebook. It's such a nightmare, but also it helps me find the people that I really enjoy in my life that I really can connect with. And as I'm doing this podcast, it gets really, I see how many amazing people I have in my friends list. And I'm like, no, these are the people that I love. Like I aspire to be like these people. I would unfriend them or I would block them if I didn't. And you know, I'm like, more of Micah, please. This girl's spicy.
Spicy.
I want to thank my friend Micah for joining me on our podcast today. You can find out more about her on her website, www.usetheclutch.com. You can find out more information about this podcast, including the show notes, on my website at SheilaKChester.com/grace. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to Raising Grace Podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. And as a reminder, I am not a parenting expert, and neither are my guests. Don't forget to give yourself and others just a little bit of grace today. Thank you.